Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, and yeah, there we go. We're now doing a podcast. Congratulations, boys. How are we, gents?
Very good.
Very well, thank you, JB.
Oh, what a considering the Six Nations is on, what a weekend of rugby.
I did wake up on Saturday morning and there was a slight emptiness. I was feeling a little bit hollow inside just with no Six Nations. But the rugby this weekend has definitely made up for that.
Oh, I'm sure I'm on record of saying this about four times a season already. This has been a tremendous, tremendous weekend of rugby, mostly for the Premiership, but there's also a very exciting Pro 12 game to talk about as well.
Yeah. For sure. Wow. Can we just like have that slow motion action replay of that statement?
Yeah. A really exciting Pro 1. Only the one, so let's not get carried away.
And there's a tremendous try in the Pro 12, I think we should mention as well.
Yes, absolutely right. Right, metaphorical, hands in, let's pod on for three. One, two, three.
Pod.
Hello and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB, in studio with Phil.
Hello, JB.
And shockingly, we have got Tim down the line, but I've not put him on the Facebook Live yet. So there you go, Tim. I think you're on Facebook Live now.
Oh, they missed all that incredible banter.
All that, yeah, all that top banter. If you're on Facebook Live and you're watching and you can hear Tim, let us know ASAP. So, as always, thank you for your reviews. Thank you for following us on Twitter at the Rugby Podcast. Tim, do we have any more of those wonderful iTunes reviews?
We certainly do. Can I firstly just say I'm sorry I'm not there in the rugby dungeon. I'm in the egg chasers TMO shipping container once again. It was my parents, my folks' Pearl wedding anniversary. So,
well, congratulations to them.
So I'll also just add, we are finally on Instagram. So
are we?
Egg chasers podcast. On Instagram.
See, I've already put us on Instagram, but I've never used it because it's a lot of effort, I find.
But it's the future. Twitter's on the way down. Instagram is the one that's going to keep growing and growing.
Well, you heard it here first.
Hear me now, believe me later. But yes, we do have some reviews. Thank you for leaving them on iTunes. Take a moment like Hugh Bugger's done, who says, "Do you love Sail Sharks? Are you under the misapprehension that they're the greatest team with ball in hand?"
They are.
Are they the greatest team on the planet? If so, then this is the podcast for you. A simply sensational Sail podcast. Sail is mentioned at least every 5 minutes, even though two of the hosts would like to discuss other issues. And then says, banter aside, a cracking pod by a group of mates who say exactly what all the other podcasts and media outlets can't or won't.
Hear, hear.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Very good review.
And Slongcock, good name.
Nice.
Says, this is the rugby podcast and the best game finishes Eddie Jones hasn't yet utilised. A unique mix of one professional broadcaster, one statistician. And then you're going to have to explain this. I don't quite know what he means by this. Slongcock says, and one colour commentator. Does that mean like a Brian Moore or an Austin Healey, someone who'll shoot from the hip?
No, it doesn't actually. So a colour commentator is a US phrase. So when you have a commentating duo, you generally tend to have the play-by-play guy who is, you know, the Nick Mullins.
Nick Mullins.
And he's describing to you on the field because he's the professional. but I don't see myself as someone who knows what's going on, really.
So yeah. No, you see yourself.
Maybe
he means
one colour, as in he only represents the blue and white of Sale Sharks.
And Bath occasionally, and sometimes Exeter.
I was going to say, you definitely yourself think that you know what's going on.
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, but you know, let's be realistic. Let's keep grounded on the situation. But yeah, I'll take anyway, it. Take it all day long.
Thank you, Sloncock.
Yeah.
Good, leave a review on iTunes.
Good reviews.
We didn't mention some of the people that make this podcast possible as well. So if you haven't already got the best razor on the market, get Cornerstone, better than Gillette, better than Wilkinson Sword, and you get an absolute steal because you listen to us. If you don't believe how good it is, just try it for £4. You get your first order for just £4 because you get a £10 discount because you listen to us. And you also, with that, get a free aluminium shaft, which you can get engraved with your initials. Just go to cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, or...
Egg 10 at checkout, of course.
Of course.
Right, let's talk rugby.
Yeah, let's do it. Why don't we start with what I think was a very impressive game?
Well, hold on. Just before we came live, we said... we talked about what we're going to talk about. We said the first thing we'll talk about...
You're absolutely right.
Is just highlighting that with the Six Nations being kind of next weekend, we're going to do a midweek international podcast on this occasion with a preview of the Six Nations games coming up and a bit more of an in-depth look at the Lions and how the runners and riders are shaping up there. But today, to start the podcast, we're going to briefly discuss something which Warren Gatland talked about, where he said only a day or two ago that he's going to leave the decision on skipper of the Lions as late as possible. Mm. Now, so who do we think he's considering and who would we pick?
Well, the four obvious ones would be the home nation's captains.
Yes.
That is the kind of immediate go-to. But that makes it a little bit difficult.
Mm-hmm. And there's no one I really like.
Well, the most obvious of those four to me appears to be Alan Wynne-Jones.
Yes, agreed.
But I'm not sure. So he's, for a long time, he wasn't Welsh captain.
Nope.
And
but although he has done the job before.
But only, he's never been permanent captain,
no,
has
he's not.
He's only ever done it as a stand-in. So that raises his questions, because Gatland obviously had a huge period of time where he could have made him captain and didn't for whatever reason. So there are a few question marks over that.
Yeah, I said this last week. Gatland thinks, or has said in the past, that he believes he's too passionate to be captain, which is bizarre.
It's always the, ice in the head, fire in the belly kind of thing.
Exactly.
And you can be too passionate when you need a cool-headed person to make logical, rational decisions.
Rory Best has been mentioned. I don't like him, but actually the more I think about it, the more he seems to be kind of gaining in those rankings. So I just don't see him starting.
But if he doesn't start, who does start?
Jamie George, I quite like. I'd like to take George and Cronin.
I know you like Cronin.
And Fraser Brown.
And Fraser Brown, yeah. Those guys, to me, are really, really good up-and-coming players and getting better every week. I think by the end of the season, they'll be going really, really strong. Laidlaw, I think we can comfortably discount at this point, can we?
Same as Hartley.
Yeah, and I don't see anyone other than Eddie Jones picking Hartley.
I think the three main names, personally, are, if I was going to maybe try and second guess what Warren Gatland is thinking, I would say it's Alan Wynne-Jones,
yeah,
who's probably, it's his to lose. Rory Best, not sure as well. And then Owen Farrell, Sam Warburton.
Yes. Now, Warburton is interesting because obviously Gatland likes him as a captain.
Will he start?
If he plays, I thought he had a brilliant game against England. I thought he was superb. If he keeps that form up between now and the Lions, he's got every chance of starting.
Got every chance, but I'm not sure if this conundrum we find ourselves in is because there are so many good players competing, or because there are no standouts.
Well, I think it's there's so many good players, but there seems to be very few leaders.
Yeah.
There's lots of players who are brilliant players across the... Like, you could name dozens of wonderful players like Hogg, like Liam Williams, like Itoje, like Rob Shaw or Haskell or Billy Vunipola, like George Ford. But none of those I would particularly see as a captain material.
No. Now, I know you like Owen Farrell, Tim.
He'd be my call, without a doubt. I think Alan Wynne-Jones is the obvious choice with the pedigree, the experience. The last time we saw him in a Lions jersey, he was lifting the trophy with Sam Warburton. But I don't think he commands with absolute certainty his position in the side, although I think he probably will end up playing and being one of the front two, but he doesn't command that. But Owen Farrell cannot be left out of this side. No. And the steely determination he has, I think he's got the mentality of a winner and a captain.
So answer me this. There's three issues with Owen Farrell. A, how much captaincy experience has he got at club level and international level? Two.
Well, let's on that.
Okay.
International, I think zero.
I think zero.
Club, I have seen him captain games.
I think, yeah.
But he's certainly not been club captain. Or right. Yeah.
But that doesn't discount him.
No.
Number two, where will he play? Will he be a fly half? Will he be a centre?
What? Either or. It'll be other people that fit around him. It won't be him being... He won't be moved to accommodate someone else. It'll be where do I want Owen Farrell, and everyone else will fit in around him.
Well, why would you take that approach with Owen Farrell for the Lions and not with England, where they do move him around to accommodate someone else?
Well, I think it's not to accommodate someone else. It's because they don't have a standout inside centre.
Maybe.
It's not to accommodate George Ford, is it?
And lastly, is it a good idea to have your decision maker being your fly half and your captain? That's a fairly rare combination.
And your kicker.
That is a fair shout.
Yeah. It's adding an extra bit of pressure to him.
So I think I'm going to keep my powder dry on this one. I don't have a standout candidate for Lions captain just yet.
Does CJ Stander captain Munster?
Good question.
Or is it Peter Omani?
I don't know.
We're gonna potentially get into an area we might get into later in the podcast where. No, don't worry. I'm not gonna get into it.
Well, so we're not
a
going
South
to
African, a South African. No. Who plays for Ireland, captaining the Lions.
Oh, I'm into that.
Let's not get into that, Tim. Get into an area that we might potentially get into later.
Someone on the old Facebook Live has just mentioned Conor Murray. That's not a bad shout.
I was then, so that's why I got into CJ Stander, was because I was looking up, has Conor Murray ever captained Munster? Conor Murray is not a bad shout as well.
Maybe that.
Yeah, interesting.
Why.
Interesting.
Now I'll tease something for the MWIP. Which is, I have done my Lions rankings. I put them on Twitter, and I think I will, only for the backs, mind. I think forwards is too difficult. And too much time. And, you know, I've got to do a day job at some point. And we can talk about that in the midweek international podcast.
Okay. What a tease.
So we're broadly...
So, give us your thoughts at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, on the Facebook live stream. Give your comments. Who would you have as Lions captain? If I was Warren Gatland, I wouldn't pick one. I'd pick a leadership team, of which many of the names we've already talked about would be included in. But just don't pick or have a tour captain, but make it clear the captain will change game to game.
I like tour captain. I don't like these leadership cultural groups. I just don't like them. I mean, I understand what it is, and I understand why you do it, but I actually think by making these artificial constructs, you kind of degrade the concept in itself. You need these groups to develop organically.
We might get into conversations about undermining the integrity of certain institutions and things when it comes to talking about international caps, Denny Salmona, etc. later in the podcast, which we just almost skirted around a couple of minutes ago. But yeah,
is that in the UK IP podcast later on?
Yeah, that's it.
All right, shall we talk about the Premiership?
The Avicii Premiership.
Oh, I'm not cute at music. Well, I'm not going to now, so it's too late. I think we go chronological on this. Let's talk about Saracens Gloucester, because I thought that was a tremendous game.
It was a great game.
Do you know what I think, most of all, about this? Well, there's two things. I think, firstly, it shows how much those second rows bring to Saracens. Saracens had, I think, over 300 international caps playing. They had at least 10 internationals playing, tier one internationals. And yet they lost to Gloucester, who have not done anything great this season. But Gloucester out Saracens with their intensity.
Their intensity and, interestingly, their kicking game.
Yeah.
I thought Burns, while he was on the field, Hook when he came on, and Will Hines, particularly from nine, kicked brilliantly. And that's something that, obviously, Saracens traditionally do very, very well.
Just on Will Hines, he did have a good game. He did kick well. But I felt sometimes he got into kicking battles with Wigglesworth and did come off
he did.
Second best.
There were a few.
It was before Christmas, and it was actually that really strong Gloucester performance against Saracens at Allianz Park where they really cemented this new Saracens-esque style, which we've seen ever since. I mean, you know, Gloucester are a team we've always thought about as really attacking rugby, incredible back three that score hatfuls of tries. They don't play like that anymore. They play like Saracens, efficient, territorial game, happy to hand possession over and defend hard, kick possession away. And that's what they did really well and then took their chances when they were there.
Yeah. Just a couple of things on Saracens. I mean, how annoying is it to watch? Well, there's two players on Saracens which really annoy me. Mike Ellery. I'm sure he's a lovely guy. I'm not entirely sure he is a professional rugby player. And the other guy, and I'm sure he's changed his game dramatically, is Sean Maitland. Now, he is the most frustrating rugby player to watch. I think he's forgotten he is an elite-level athlete. He doesn't back himself. It looks like he should just put his foot down and run because he is one of the most athletic players in the entire league. And yet he just doesn't do it. He seems to cut back inside. He seems to run at half space, look for support. He's doing absolutely everything that he wasn't doing last year at London Irish.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Again, we mentioned it last week, but there are a couple of times where he broke the line and you want him to go. You wanted him to pin his ears back and go for the corner or take on the fullback. And he's automatically looking for the offload or looking for the support.
Because not only
I'm with you on that one.
Not only is he fast, he's really strong. He's a big lad too.
Yeah.
You know, nothing should be stopping him really. And yet, it kind of looks like he's running in treacle half the time.
Question.
Go. Shoot. Hit me
with
it.
Tell me what you think about me.
Nice. Timely.
Do you think this game teaches us anything about the two sides?
Yes.
What?
No.
Okay, so firstly, Saracens really need their locks. If they don't have their locks, they miss all sorts of intensity. And I think Hamilton and Rhodes really, really worked hard. The endeavour was there, but I just don't think they can generate the sort of intensity that they have without Itoji and without Cruz. Thought that was absolutely critical. And I also think...
And Vunipola.
Yeah.
Billy.
Yes,
of the
course.
Billy,
yeah.
I mean, Billy is...
And Jamie George.
Yeah.
Well, although Brits is pretty
Brits
handy.
Is pretty good. I mean, they rotate those two guys anyway. And, you know, they were lacking intensity from the go. It also tells me Mako Vunipola is one hell of a player.
Yes. He is excellent, and he was brilliant. To come back from 6 weeks off with a knee injury and have that level of intensity, that was excellent.
Because like they do miss those two locks, as I've mentioned, three times now, but also with Skelton going, they just seem a little bit thin on the ground there. And I'm not sure Michael Rhodes is a lock whatsoever.
Well, he is a barrow. He's only covering it because they are so short.
Yeah.
So what you're saying, so the stuff you'll learn is just on the injury cover, really, is the lack of depth in certain some positions.
I mean, they've got a ton of depth. I mean,
not at lock, but
across the
That is your point. Yeah. They don't have depth
across the entire team. I think most teams, most fan bases would kill to be able to put out that quality of team week in, week out.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Minus Ellery, probably.
I think one of the things you learn is that Gloucester play well when they decide they want to. They were woeful against Leicester last week. Awful.
Do you know, Tim, can I tell you something really interesting? Can I tell you something really interesting, though?
We've built it up now. Yes. It better be interesting.
It is. I think it's interesting.
Tim, say no.
So, I only found this out after the podcast last week. But Leicester's first try was actually a design sequence of four moves, which they ran to perfection for that first try.
So that was the one with the Jack Roberts.
That's right.
Off the, was it Line Out?
Yeah, Line Out.
Jack Roberts. Yeah, go on.
Off the top, and they targeted basically two things to do with Gloucester's defence. Would you like to know what they were?
No.
Brilliant. They targeted the fact, and this is unbelievable, they identified that they had a back row in the defensive line, which they saw as a weakness. So they basically blocked off him. But the next bit is fascinating, which is they also targeted the fact that Gloucester worked really hard in D. So they went one side of the ruck, then the other, and then they moved, had another move coming round with the 8 and the 9, knowing that Gloucester are so keen to overchase, and then they brought Jack Roberts back inside. And those were four pre-planned moves which resulted in a try, which I find astonishing in terms of game plan.
Hmm.
No one else find that interesting?
Training ground moves work.
Training ground moves targeting a defence because they work hard.
That is quite interesting, actually.
If they had if Gloucester were lazy, had a lazy defender who didn't want to chase, they would have stopped that try.
Yeah.
That
is quite interesting, actually.
So
counterintuitive.
Yeah, and apparently Leicester had three of those moves, and they all were very successful.
Any standout performers from this game for anyone apart from Mako, who's already been mentioned?
Tim Marshall.
Tom Marshall.
Yeah, Marshall.
Tom, is it Tim or Tom?
Tom.
Tom Marshall. Who is this boy?
Tom Marshall. He's a New Zealander, isn't he? He came from the Crusaders, I think.
Did he have a... It wasn't the guy, was it, who was at Toulon for a little while?
No, I don't...
Don't know why I thought that.
Think so. No. No.
And he's just shown up and ran the show?
Well, he's been there... He was there last season, but he's been injured on and off. I think he's had knee and foot injuries for the last couple of years, so he's only played a handful of games.
Yeah, he was an absolute revelation, actually.
Yeah, Crusaders and Chiefs he was.
Right, so to wrap that up, I would say Saracens aren't their normal selves. They didn't look as strong in defence. They are without some pretty top-line talent. The number of caps and experience they had on the pitch, you would still expect them to be competitive and possibly more
win.
So than they
You'd
were.
Expect them to win.
But maybe this was just Gloucester on a hot day, and they'll go back to being the other Gloucester that we sometimes see next week.
No, Gloucester's year. 2017, the year of the Gloucester.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. They're going to be awesome. Yeah. One or two.
How much do you read into... Because there was a few results this weekend that, you raised your eyebrows at. How much generally do we... Because we talk about the poor quality of the Pro 12 as a spectacle when there's so many internationals away. Well, when the internationals away, how much do we read into Saracens' performance and Wasps' performance and various other performances by teams that have a lot of players missing?
Well, they do have a lot of players missing, but they're incredibly deep squads. And also, they don't have that many players missing compared to their Pro 12 rivals. I don't really put much stock into it, really. I got into this battle on Twitter. Should Pro 12 play during Six Nations? Categorically not.
Oh,
no.
I'm with you. I said the same thing on previous podcasts.
I mean, if you think that, you are categorically a moron. Okay.
Don't say that.
No, you are. Okay. No, you absolutely are. Okay, because the Pro 12 has six teams effectively. Okay, six very good, world class organizations. No, I'll limit that to say four. Right. Of which most of those players are taken from. So it's
we know this.
Oh, okay. Well, carry on then.
We've talked about this before. Exactly. And we all kind of came to the conclusion that the Pro 12 is a shell of a competition during this Six Nations period. And we
absolutely
prefer no fixtures.
So let's look at the Premiership. Yes, they do lose players, but not even to the same level as the Pro 12. And the squads tend to be on average, a lot deeper. And then you've got teams like Sale today who hardly lose anyone, and Newcastle who hardly lose anyone, and then Worcester. So, yeah, why not?
Okay, cool.
Done.
I think a question for me from the weekend's Avicii Premiership is, and we just sort of touched on Leicester there, are Leicester back? Have they turned a corner, or are they just taking advantage of this period, or maybe playing against a couple of teams who played really poorly in Gloucester and Bristol?
I think slightly more of the latter, that they have had two easier games and some more difficult fixtures will test them more. But there are a lot of positives from the Leicester performances. They've looked a lot more cohesive going forward. And a player who impressed me this weekend just gone, who hasn't particularly impressed me most of the season, Luke Hamilton at number eight. They've missed, we've said it before, they've missed that ball carrying, it could come from anywhere, but they've missed that gain line breaker. So, and I thought he's done that role effectively.
Is there a more baby-faced looking player in the Avicii Premiership than Luke Hamilton?
Baby-faced back
row. Doesn't he look about 15?
Yes, yeah. Still got a bit of puppy fat.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting because Luke Hamilton wasn't getting in the team earlier on in the season. I think he was a bit soft for the Cochrane regime. And I actually think...
Do you mean poppy fat soft or mentality soft?
A bit of both, actually. And if you look at... let's take Gloucester next year. Gloucester are going to be an enormous back row. Morgan, Ferns and Moriarty.
So they're still a very average second row, mind you.
Well, yes. But whatever they're doing, you can see that there's a kind of general trend in the size of the players. Well, if you look at Leicester, maybe they have been building for this because they've got lightweight mobile players, O'Connor, McCaffrey, Hamilton. And I think they might have turned the corner because if I'm watching them against Bristol, who were poor, admittedly, and against Gloucester, who weren't really at the races, but then next week turned it round, their ruck is a lot quicker. Everything that they do seems a lot quicker. And I think this pack might have been built for this sort of game where they might have been playing the old type of...
One of the standout players for Leicester, without any question, who I think has they've missed possibly above all others, and Eddie Jones loves him, Mike Williams.
No.
A proper bruiser.
No, I don't agree with that. I think Mike Williams is good, but I actually think it's the change of style rather than Mike Williams coming back. I'm not that convinced that Mike Williams is that important to this team.
He was absolutely huge against Bristol. He was an absolute beast around the park, winning ball, smashing people.
Yeah,
he was doing the kind of job which I think is I sort of saw him doing the kind of job that Eddie Jones I think sees him doing potentially for England.
Yeah, he just basically wants a bit of an enforcer, but I don't think Mike Williams is quite in the upper category for that. And the problem with Mike Williams is he's very good at a lot of things without being excellent at any single thing.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced. He did have a good game and he carried hard and put in some big hits against Bristol, but I'm still not convinced that he is international calibre.
Yeah,
there are question marks over what
Leicester have lacked in the games that I've seen them, and when they came up against Glasgow and Racing, Munster, is they lacked any kind of that physicality of anyone fronting up to them, and Mike Williams did that more so than any other Leicester player yesterday.
I think you've nailed it in that respect. I think Mike Williams is the physicality that they were missing against Glasgow, against Munster. I completely agree with that. But what I'm saying is I don't think that they're going to be playing like that in the future. I don't think they're relying on that physicality. And if you look at the back five of Leicester, they're very athletic. I think they're built to play the major way rather than the Cockerill way. So that's why I think they may have turned the corner.
But it's two different things, isn't it? You need, if to allow you to have that, it's the old forwards carry the piano and the backs play it. Mm-hmm. It's that old analogy. So without having that physical edge up front, you don't get the opportunity for your Vianus, who was brilliant, to dance around and beat numerous defenders on his way to the try line.
And isn't it interesting when the temperature gets back to double digits, JP Peterson suddenly reappears?
Yes. Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yep.
He's managed to miss all of the winter months.
It's a skill I had myself as well, Tim, when I was playing.
Keep talking, boys.
Ooh. But are you just fixing something, remedying something, JB?
He's off somewhere. Anyway.
So I would caveat Leicester saying Leicester are back because I think they've played against two very poor sides. Well, I suppose the flip side to that coin is how have Bristol just fallen off a cliff?
Yes.
And they really have, haven't they?
Yes.
What's happened?
It looks like it. It's a good question, actually, because it was interesting to see the LV Cup, Sale used it to not to rest their players, to play all of their best players and get some form. and it seems to be working a little bit. Whereas Bristol did the opposite. They let all of their best players have a couple of weeks of rest, recover from some niggles, and it has had exactly the opposite effect.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what's gone wrong with Bristol, really. Mind you, they are still playing some attractive rugby. I mean, they do make the break here or there.
Well, Leicester had 80% possession.
Yeah.
80%.
Yeah.
It was men against boys.
You're right there. That is the sign of an absolute beatdown, because usually possession statistics don't correlate particularly well with winning. Well, when you hammer someone and you have all the possession, that's when you know you really have done a number on someone.
So the correlation for possession and territory, they don't correlate very well at all with the result. However, when you combine possession with meters made, defenders beaten, and turnovers won, when you get all of those things, then it correlates very, very well with winning. And in this game, obviously, Leicester had all of those things and more.
Yeah,
in their favour.
It was a brutal, brutal beatdown.
Bristol, one thing I can think of, and I don't know whether it has happened, but a few things spring to mind. One is, do you remember when London Welsh were going really well? And then Steve Diamond sort of revelled in the problems at London Welsh. He was very vocal about them.
Oh, is this, and then, this London Welsh Mark 1, their first
Premiership? Yeah, London Welsh Mark 1, Welsh Mark 1. And then all of a sudden, like, there was that controversy. There was all sorts of attention of the wrong kind, and they fell off a cliff. And then Steve Diamond was very, very vocal about Ascot and all of that. And I wonder whether that could have rocked the apple cart slightly. I also look at it and think Dwayne Peel has been announced; he's off to Ulster. Mark Tainton isn't going to be the head coach next year.
Yeah,
loads of players are going. I'm hearing there's lots of rumours about players that are currently in the squad and unhappy and going to be sent out despite being regular first choice players. And then there's a whole load of going in. So maybe it's just there's so much instability with all of that, that it's there's just not that cohesion that there was when they were all in it together at the start of the season.
I tell you what, it'd be interesting to know as well, who is deciding which players leave and which players stay? Are they getting memos from Connacht, or...
Well, Pat Lamb has brought in Lua Tua. Yeah, Stephen Lua Tua.
And rumours this week about TJ Perenara and Ryan Crotty.
Those two going to Bristol?
Well, that's been touted. Wow. I think there's quite a few teams in for both of them.
I don't like it.
Yeah, they are two high quality operators.
I don't see it being a sensible strategy, because yes, are they great players? Absolutely, they are. But I think, as you're seeing with a lot of Premiership teams now, the secret to success in the Premiership is not to buy it. It's actually to...
You can't. You've got to raise talent yourself. Yeah. You've got to build talent.
So if they do that, they might be getting the wrong... They might be instilling the wrong culture. They might be getting...
Culture,
which I love. I actually think what they should have done is they should have extended players such as Mitch Eadie, such as Jamal Ford Robinson, and built around that nucleus and supplemented, rather than trying to get megastars. But what do I know?
Yeah.
It's been what they've trying to do. They've been trying to the last few years. They've been paying... Apparently, from what we're led to believe, they've been paying far over the odds for players to extend themselves to get as good as they could in the Championship. I mean, there was there not talk of Adam Jones going to them at one point?
There was
big names that they were.
Yeah, Ian Gough went on big money.
Ian Gough went on big money.
Did he?
Ryan Jones went on big money.
Not Ian Gough.
Ian Evans.
Not Ian Gough.
What's his name? Who's now the defence coach? Former Welsh captain
Jonathan Thomas.
What's his name?
Jonathan Thomas.
Yeah. So I think it's just now they're in the Premiership, they can try and do the same thing but with higher profile players. But they're probably not going to be playing in the Premiership. I don't know.
It looks unlikely, doesn't it?
It does at the moment. Particularly with Sale obviously got the win. Worcester won last weekend, picked up a bonus point this weekend, a 4-try bonus point this weekend. So it does. Things are moving away from Bristol.
It's looking ominous.
Yes. Definitely.
Mm.
The other Saturday games. So, Worcester-Exeter.
Yeah.
Very high scoring. Some very impressive performances from Exeter Chiefs.
Okay. Steenson. Steenson just seems to get better and better and better. And you think, oh, what was he now, 32, 33?
Yeah, that kind of age.
He must be slowing down by now, shouldn't he?
A little bit, probably.
Well, far from it. Far from it. He's throwing dummies.
The star of the show at 10 for Exeter in that second half when Steenson went off injured, they were down when Henry Slade moved to 10.
I don't know. Well, yes, I don't know. I do know. You are right. Yeah, I thought Steenson was magnificent. And the other guy I thought Slade did well. Who is Sam Simmons? Who is this monster?
This Academy number 8.
Did they find
through
him down a Cornish tin mine or something? Unbelievable.
Yeah.
How big is he? We'll be talking 6'3", something like 6'4".
No, he's actually not that big.
Is he not?
Because, so I saw him stood next, last week he got man of the match, and he was stood next to Bayfield. Like, Bayfield makes everyone look small.
He does.
But Bayfield was stood next to Billy Van Der Poel on Friday night. And
he's
he doesn't
a good yardstick for big men, though, isn't he?
He is a very good yardstick, because you know a big, so Billy Van Der Poel didn't look too small stood next to Bayfield.
Yes.
Billy Van Der Poel, therefore, is a big man.
Exactly right.
Sam Simmons looked like a kid stood next to him. So he's listed. I'm on Exeter Chiefs website. Do you want to guess his height and weight listed?
Yeah, okay. So as you said, he's a bit smaller than I would expect. I'm going to say he is 110 kilograms and 6'2".
Any re-raise on that, Tim?
No. I would go... How many kgs did you say, JB?
110.
110.
6'3 and 104 kgs.
So those weights, 104 would probably, certainly for an international number 8, would be a bit lightweight.
Yeah, massively lightweight. Yeah. That's like winger size.
He's listed, and bearing in mind, he's 23 now, but he's listed as 6 foot on the nose.
What?
And 93 kg. This is Exeter's.
What? No way.
Exeter. So I am assuming this is a couple of years old and he's put on a bit of timber, but he's not, he's fast. And he's strong, but he's not a big bloke.
Wow. Right. Well, I don't believe you. So if you have any fans in Exeter, if you have any listeners in Exeter, can you weigh Sam Simmons, please?
So I am saying he's heavier than that 93, for the record, but he will not be 110.
Steve Parrott's listening, someone like that. Just measure him for us.
Next Exeter game, take a set of scales and a meter rule with you. We want some proper scale.
Yes, yeah. Please. Yes, please.
Wow, I didn't realize that. I thought he's like a debut.
No. And you look at the break that he made, which I think led up to his try, where he broke out of his own 22. It could have been Campagnaro. It was that kind of break.
Yeah.
It was power through the tackle and the acceleration to get away, rather than the Nathan Hughes, Billy Van Der Poel type.
Now, would you like to know something which you already know?
No.
Okay then. Hoogaard's amazing. Hoogaard is simply amazing. And it's quite clear that they've missed him all season.
They have missed him. I watched the extended highlights of this game with the kind of thinking that Hoogaard and Gary Gold coming in, this is a very super rugby like Worcester Warriors performance.
Mm.
As in, They scored four tries, they got the four try bonus point, and they played some beautiful attacking rugby. At times, their defence was very, very questionable.
Yes.
It was that old, well, who cares about attack? Who cares about defence if we can score four tries kind of mentality?
When he first came over, I did think, how effective will the reserve spring half winger be at scrum half for Worcester? The answer is very, very, very effective indeed.
Yes.
So I think they will. I think they're going to pull away from Bristol. I don't think they're going to overtake Sale, but I think they will pull away from Bristol now.
Well, if they overtake Sale, they'll win the whole thing, presumably.
Yes, that's a good point, actually. It's a good point. Shall we shall we go for a quiz?
Yeah, I was going to say. So we've there's still games to talk about and general summarising to do. But let's, as we've got a kind of natural break here, and Phil just mentioned Super Rugby, I have prepared a Super Rugby inspired quiz, because that competition starts on Thursday morning. The first game, what is it, Rebels v the Chiefs?
You know more than me.
Don't know, mate. Couldn't tell you.
I'm pretty sure the first game is in Melbourne, and it's Thursday morning, 8:35 a.m.
Thursday morning, 8:35 a.m.
It's this time of year when I quite enjoy the fact I work in the evening.
Because
a cup of coffee and get down, get the AeroPress, bit of brown toast with some peanut butter on, and we'll watch a bit of Super Rugby on a Thursday morning.
90 points each.
Yeah. So I've got a quiz inspired by that, but just some comments that are coming through on Facebook Live currently. One from a good friend of the pod, James Abraham, says it's so nice not to see hot pants in today's podcast.
Abraham can mind his own business.
If you don't know what we're talking about, we are Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast on Facebook and the Midweek Domestic Podcast, and all last week's podcast. Featured JB fresh from training in. Or hot pants is probably the right word for it.
Yes. It's the way I was saying.
They were very, very short shorts. Indecently short, some might say. And in fact, a lot of people did say.
And James Thane has left a message, which I will leave as a little tease for, I'm sure, an interesting debate still to come on this podcast. He says, Denny Solomona for the Lions.
Denny. I said it three times because that's the amount of tries that he scored today.
Yes.
Go on then.
Super Rugby quiz then.
Yes.
Okay, so Phil, I'm going to let you just choose A or B. Say A or B.
A, please.
Right. So what I'm going to do, you're going to have the list I've marked A. JB, you're going to have the list I've marked B.
Yes, please.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to go through Super Rugby franchises, and you're going to have to tell me the city in which they play.
Ooh. So let me get up the list of cities.
So I've already mentioned the Rebels. We know they're Melbourne, for example.
Yep.
So I would accept Melbourne. I will not accept the state or the region. I will just accept the city that they play in.
Okay.
Okay, so...
Don't some have like a dual city base? Because they do represent...
Like Munster.
Yeah, great example. Anyway,
quite right, and there might have been extra marks for that.
Ah.
But anyway,
okay.
First one, Phil. The Lions.
Thank God.
Is that Johannesburg?
Correct.
Yes.
1-0 to Phil. The next one, staying in South Africa.
No, I'm not good at these
the
ones.
The Bulls.
So is this me or JB?
This is JB, the Bulls.
Okay, so Blue Bulls. It's Pretoria.
Is correct, JB. I'm impressed.
Very good.
Okay, the next one, and we move to Australia for this one. Phil, the Brumbies.
Is Canberra.
Correct.
God damn it.
JB.
Mm-hmm.
The Hurricanes.
Wellington.
Is also correct. Phil. Highlanders.
So is this one with two available?
Not to my knowledge.
So I would like to say... Well...
Glad you got the Highlanders. I would not.
Because it's one of two. I'm sure they represent a region which includes two cities. I'm going to say...
Go on, mate. Have a go.
We might need a steward's inquiry on this.
Dunedin.
Is what I have written down. Dunedin.
Well done. I never
The region
that.
Or province, I'm not sure what the right word is, but is Otago.
Otago. Okay.
JB, the Cheetahs.
Oh, God. Cheetahs.
So, if JB gets this wrong, do I get a chance to steal?
No. Just give me a second. Oh, for God's sakes, where would the Cheetahs be? I don't know. I'm going to have to guess. Cape Town.
Can I try and steal, Tim?
That's incorrect. Philip?
Is it Bloemfontein?
It is Bloemfontein.
How?
Okay, Phil, back to you. The Kings.
Ooh.
Do I get to steal?
So they're the Southern Kings, aren't they? So I'm going to go Port Elizabeth.
Oh, my word. He's absolutely rinsed you, JB.
Oh, I knew that one as well. But
just for pride, the Reds.
Oh, easy one.
Hang on, Queensland's a state, isn't it?
It is.
God damn it. Brisbane?
Correct.
Thank God.
Phil won that 5-3, but I have a...
5-3? Which ones did I get wrong?
5-3.
Oh, you stole one?
Yeah.
Oh, whatever.
But I have a supplementary one now, which I'm not sure anyone will get anything of. So I'm just gonna ask if you can take it in turns, and I'll let JB go first on this one. Can you name a team who have handed over naming rights of their side for the forthcoming Super Rugby season? So, for example, it would be known as the...
Earth Titans.
Earth Titans, or the JB Moore Sail Sharks.
Pertemps Bees,
of course, yes.
Yes. Because there are an incredible seven sides that have done this.
So, do you want to go for one, Jay, or can I go for one?
Let me have...
You kind of know them or you don't, I guess, don't you?
Yeah. So,
go on.
Is it the DHL Stormers?
I don't believe that may well have been in the past, but that's not one of the current ones. No, they may still be sponsored by them, but they haven't got the naming rights. I'm just going to declare Phil the winner, and I'll just tell you these.
Okay, go on.
So you're now going to hear, and I find this a bit annoying, to be honest. I like sponsorship,
but not too much sponsorship. Don't ruin the game.
I don't mind a ground being named.
It's like talking to a National Trust inspector.
I mean, who wants to support? I'm happy to support the Sun.
I'll do it.
I'm happy to
support
the Sun Wolves. But who wants to say, I support the Hito Communications Sun Wolves?
I'm all in. I love that line.
I'm a proud follower of the Gallagher Chiefs.
I loved James Haskell. Said in an interview once that he had to check his contract when he went over to the Rioch Black Rams to make sure he wasn't assembling photocopiers in his spare time.
it's like when you listen to the Worcester president talking about his new pitch, where he's saying it's the most underutilised asset because we only use it for 80 minutes every 2 weeks. Your players, they only train for a couple of hours a day and they play for a couple of hours on a Saturday. Why not utilise them?
Exactly right. Exactly. Screwdriver. It's good for their development.
Yeah. I'm proud to say, man and boy, I follow the Pulse Energy Highlanders.
Is that what they are?
The Pulse.
Yeah. The Plus 500 Brumbies.
Plus.
Wow. Okay.
Toyota Cheetahs.
Love it.
The Vodacom Bulls. And the Emirates Lions.
I think. If I was going to get name rights, I'd only take it from people that are renowned for things like 4x4s, weapons.
Yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I think building supplies are okay.
Yeah.
What's not okay is cosmetics, fashion labels.
Well, no, you say fashion labels, but... So I love that Northampton are churches.
That's a good point. That's a good point well made.
But it has to be the right kind of fashion label.
That makes sense for Northampton, doesn't it? Because it's a city built on shoemakers.
But I tell you what is unacceptable, for instance, is Nivea and Liverpool. I mean, that isn't acceptable.
Dove in England.
No,
Dove sponsor the Six Nations.
That's a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because Dove do Wales as well, don't they?
Yeah, well, I think Six Nations maybe.
What I always think is a bit frustrating about the Dove men care sponsorship of the England rugby team is that they use Ben Youngs and not Danny Care for it's such an obvious thing to think of, isn't it?
Yes, skincare. Yeah, love it.
Just going back one step, DHL on the Stormers on their own website, they call themselves the DHL Stormers.
Okay, well there you go. You just extended your already unassailable lead, Phil.
Yes.
What, does Phil get to answer his own questions now? Okay.
All right. So while we're just breaking from the Avicii Premiership, we have poured scorn on the Pro 12 during this Six Nations window, not overall. And I think for any relatively new listeners to the podcast, I think that there may be a slight misunderstanding.
We're quite clear on this.
There are some outstanding, potentially Europe best side in Europe.
Yeah, there are.
Will
massively
come from the Pro 12.
But the league's
some outstanding
rubbish.
Sides.
League's rubbish. Teams are great.
There are some really, really poor sides. Bristol are looking kind of Newport Gwent Dragons-esque at the minute.
Don't be ridiculous. Don't be ridiculous.
Zebra-esque.
No, not even close. Maybe Edinburgh standard, but not as bad as the other guys that you mentioned.
But we've definitely poured scorn on the competition through this Six Nations window, and we do have a solution. Cast the Italian sides adrift, let them play either in a French lower division or start a European-wide league with a side from Georgia, a side from Romania,
etc. No one said that. That's a ridiculous idea, because you couldn't get them there. The transport links don't exist.
What, flying from Italy to Romania?
No, it's very, very hard to get direct flights to Georgia. It'd be very difficult.
I don't think it's an insurmountable issue.
It is
insurmountable.
It is. You'd have to basically charter planes and all sorts. It's very, 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 very difficult.
So anyway, but there was some Pro 12 rugby going on this weekend. So whilst we don't like the fact that the teams featured hardly any household names and were largely second strings, more so in the case of some teams than others. However, Ruin Pienaar, oh my word, that try for Ulster. Talk us through it, Phil.
A thing of beauty.
Proud Ulsterman.
Well, it started with a Glasgow break from the halfway line into Ulster's 22. And then the ball was stripped and went through, I want to say, about 10 different pairs of hands. And next thing you know, Pienaar is at the other end of the pitch. In his second or third involvement in the play, round in the New Zealand second row that they've got to dot it down. It was absolutely brilliant. Wonderful try. It was a relatively strong Ulster lineup, not completely full strength, but relatively strong, certainly compared to the number of players that Glasgow are losing. And so it was a good win, very good win for Ulster.
Yeah, so I mean, the only game I think is worth talking about. I mean, just to back you up, that try was exceptional. It was pretty special. For me, the game of the week by a country mile, maybe in both leagues, was Ospreys Munster.
Yep.
It was superb. Both teams shorn of some internationals, but the ones that were released, such as Sam Davis, did play. Munster won this.
I feel like they both probably lose roughly equal number of internationals as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right there. Just everything Munster do is so clinical. I think their line-out is absolutely outstanding. Their pack, I think, might be the most well-drilled in the Pro 12. And they just don't give up. They've got a culture of winning. You think that you've got them down. I think they were down by two scores going... on the edge of half time, last play before the half, they claw it back to about 2 points, I think. Just a monumental performance. Great game.
And the try that won it, the Kilcoyne try, with 2 minutes to go. And Blaendal obviously slotting the conversion to win it.
Yeah, the rest of it, though, as in the league, got Scarlets 42, Zebra 7. Or Edinburgh, Leinster 39-10.
If you're just going to do this,
57-20.
Such a depressed voice. I'd rather you didn't actually do it.
Yeah, so the rest of it was pretty rubbish. But Ospreys Munster was well worth watching. Shall we finish off the rest of the Premiership now, boys?
Yes.
Yeah, back to the Avicii.
Yeah. So one more game to discuss. Newcastle Northampton, obviously.
Obviously.
Well, lots of tweets have come in to At Rugby Podcast, and I think possibly one thing we've been guilty of, as has been pointed out by some Falcons fans, is not really giving Newcastle the prominence on the podcast and the time on the podcast that they probably deserve. And if you look at this season as a whole,
I disagree with that. I think we've given them quite a lot of time, actually.
Yeah, we have spoken, possibly not as much as some other clubs, but we've given them a lot of plaudits.
They are still not in the top six, but they're playing some very attractive rugby. There's no two ways about that.
James Hogarth tweeted us to say, with the fixtures going as they are and other teams stuttering, are Newcastle favourites for that sixth spot?
Interesting question.
No.
It's very, very competitive.
Could they do it? Absolutely. Are they favourites? No. But I think it's well within their reach.
It's definitely possible.
I mean, that back...
They've got Sinotti back. Their side's better than it has been.
It's incredible, isn't it? You know, I think Watson's out, isn't he? But Watson will be back soon. They've got Hammersley. I mean, they've got a really good squad now.
Yeah, although Hammersley is out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, true.
But Lamoz to be added to that back line next season.
That's an incredible signing, isn't it?
Yeah, and Takalua, who obviously scored a hat-trick today, is fairly handy as well.
Yeah, his fantasy points must be through the roof.
Yes.
Hat-trick, and he's been kicking.
Yes. So just on that, they are in seventh at the moment. They are one place behind Harlequins, so it is not inconceivable.
Do you know what though? If the team ahead of you are Harlequins, yeah, why not?
Yeah, yeah.
Because
who's eighth then? Gloucester.
Northampton are eighth, 1 point behind Newcastle, and Gloucester are 1 point behind them. And then there is a bit of a gap to Sale, who are 5 points further back.
But they will catch someone.
So, Northampton, Newcastle, I've only seen the tries, the highlights of it that while we were in the clubhouse, and that I've only seen probably about four or five of the tries, but it looks like a very, very good performance, and even from those brief clips, Sinotti looked fairly handy.
Yeah, I mean, they are a team that can use space well. And because they've got so many threatening runners, whether it be Sacchino or Sinotti or
Gonover.
Watson or Gonover. Or
Alex Tate comes into the line well.
Yeah.
And Hodgson is a fairly handy runner.
It worries defences. And they score so much as well. And don't forget Takalua. Apparently he's not too bad.
Yes.
So, maybe they'll make top six. If you get seventh, there's a chance you get into the playoff this year. Or do you get into the playoff this year?
I'm still confused. I don't know, is the honest answer.
There you go.
Well, one person from Newcastle that I think, much as, you know, we saw a beatdown for Leicester, and we talked about the importance for the balance and enabling guys like Vianu, Peterson to wreak havoc, is someone like Mike Williams. Mark Wilson.
Yes. Yeah,
what a player! I'm looking at him and thinking, what does he have to do to get on Eddie Jones's radar?
No, he's got to do what everyone else does, mate.
Play for Leicester, Bath, or Saracens.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a cynical thing to say. Do we really believe that?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Well,
unless his name's Ben Tail.
So yeah, let's look at it from the other way.
Ask Steve Diamond. See what he thinks.
From the bottom four teams. Well, they're not the bottom four teams, but from...
Yeah, here's the question. Not just saying Sale don't have any players. This is the question, Gorkville.
So, how many players from Worcester, Bristol, Newcastle, Sale are in the England squad at the moment? And it is just Ben Teo, I think.
No. The question... I thought you were going to ask a better question than that, Phil. The question would be, how many players from the bottom four teams deserve to be in the England squad and aren't?
That is probably the better question, you're right, Tim. You tell me your opinion.
Mark Wilson, end of conversation.
Mark Wilson. Mike Haley has been in and around the squads.
Beaumont-ish.
Not on his form this season. His form last season, yes. His form this season, no.
But the counter to that is you've got to move when you get to England standard anyway. So you wouldn't get any guys in the bottom four because they have to move to further their career. That's what certainly Steve Diamond would say.
Sure, course, it's what Steve Diamond says.
Well,
but
I'm sure
that's
what Dean Richards would say too.
Listen, I mean, it serves his agenda
What agenda? What agenda? What is this agenda? Where do you get this agenda from? The Freemasons.
The agenda is wanting to spin the facts.
Spin the facts.
Yeah.
What does that mean? What?
So what it means is, I'm sorry, I might have said something slightly critical to your beloved Steve Diamond.
No. Talk in terms of Dean Richards. Because Dean Richards will say exactly the same thing. If you want to,
you can't be an
England international up in Newcastle. Last one that they had.
I thought the better question is which players deserve to be but aren't there. And then maybe if there was a load of players that you think deserve to be in the England squad and aren't getting a look in, then you might go, "Oh, there seems to be something going on here." But I honestly don't believe they moved
before that. So when Sale or Newcastle or whoever it is are looking to sign players, though, they will take into consideration, well, we don't get picked for England if we're at Sale, and we don't get picked if
that's picked rubbish.
Well, that's exactly the conversations that happen.
Well, then those players are stupid because there's no and their facts agents are stupid to back that up.
But they're all facts, aren't there? Because that's what happens.
No, there aren't.
Well, Danny Cipriani moved to further his England career. The money was the same.
And how has that worked out for him?
Badly. Good. Good.
So that doesn't prove prove either side, though.
Tommy Taylor. Kieran Brooks.
No. Tommy Taylor, because he got offered way more money than he could and he wanted to play in European competition.
Well, dress it up however you want. But if you want to go forward with your England career, you generally have to move to a top four club. And that's not unreasonable. That's just what happens.
No, how about it's players that are the best players want to play. This is why getting into top six and playing in the later stages of Europe is so important.
Well, Sale were in the top six last year and the year before that.
And then they just threw Europe away. That's like, you know, until the last game in Toulon, they didn't really show up.
Right, okay, so it's not about the top six. But I think you'll find most of the directors of rugby at the bottom of the... I mean, Exeter. I mean, how long have Exeter been up there now? And they've still not arguably got the recognition that they deserve. This is a conversation which is only going on, last year, the year before?
I'd say the same thing again. Tell me. Yeah. I understand people going, I really like this player. I think he should be considered. There's a massive leap to what you're saying, which is a hugely one-eyed point of view from parochial point of view from fans of individual clubs where they're saying it's a conspiracy.
Yeah. It's not a conspiracy.
They're not picking
it's not
players
conspiracy.
Because they're from this club. That's ridiculous.
No. That isn't. They don't pick them because they're not from that club. But if the impression exists that you have to move to Leicester or Northampton or whatever it is to get picked, or Wasps, that's what players do. And these
Stuart
are the conversations.
Lancaster, Eddie Jones, knowing.
And these are the conversations that happen between players and agents.
That impression, and I'd say service because so.
I'm not entirely sure
for players, and players don't want to move them, even though they have the money now. And maybe the chickens are coming home to roost a little bit. And if Steve Diamond hadn't spent the last few years.
I think he's agreeing with me.
His players don't play for England when they come to Sale. Then maybe more players would want to go.
Tim, I think. Well, you're really cutting out.
But I'm sure he agreed with me. Does that sound like he's agreeing with me, Phil?
I don't agree with you, but I'm not sure. I won't speak on Tim's behalf.
Don't talk about Sale. Talk about Exeter, because they've said the same thing for a long time. They were fairly unfashionable, and even now they're doing well. They don't get the recognition. They've got one international.
Who for Exeter deserves to be in the England side or any other international side that isn't?
Other than Jack Noel and Slade, who's in the squad, and Luke Carandick, who's been up and around.
Yes, yeah, so, exactly. So
but who?
Up and around. I mean, Dave Ewers hasn't got a single cap yet. Thomas Waldron was top try scorer 2 years. Not top try scoring forward, top try scorer. You know, so you can make a good argument.
So you would have put him ahead of Billy Vunipola?
No, but you'd have him in the squad at least, surely. You'd have a look at him.
So what you're saying is they're not even looking at these players because they're at Exeter.
I'm saying they're
that is an interesting perspective.
Certain clubs have a different amount of a different amount of influence.
We've spoke about this for way too long.
Well,
shall we get on to the final game of the weekend?
Yeah. Well, no. I didn't want to take away from Newcastle. My point was, I reckon of people that aren't in the England squad. And maybe are putting their hand up and saying, that they should be. I think Henry Slade had a big weekend, and he reminded people of what he can do, and probably more than anyone else. And I don't know how much more Mark Wilson can give before he's considered. And Eddie Jones can obviously see something in other people that he doesn't see in Mark Wilson. I just think Mark Wilson's playing out of his skin.
You'll have to move to Leicester. So last game of the, I don't even know what was the last game of the weekend.
I think that's it. Do you want to do fixtures for next week?
Fixtures next week, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got Friday night, Quinn's Leicester.
I'm gonna go with Quinn's at Leicester.
No, Quinn's hosting Leicester.
Right, I'm interrupting this sham with a tweet from Daniel Ross. He says. Lads, has Tim's piss started to simmer at the talk of Denny Solomona for England?
I knew something else happened this weekend. Come on, then. Did you watch this on TV, Tim?
Yeah, I did. I did. The AJ Bell looked all right. It looked about maybe a half to two-thirds full.
Yeah, 5,000.
Yeah, 5,600.
Is that all there was?
Yeah.
It was... So, from I would like to think an unbiased, objective perspective. The atmosphere was actually quite good.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
It wasn't full. It was, like you say, Tim, half to two-thirds.
We got there...
Somewhere on the 50 to 60%. But it was... The crowd made a lot of noise, and they got behind Sale.
We had to get... we got there an hour and a half early, just in case, didn't we?
We did have our winter supply gear
exactly.
In the car.
I took a
end of world preparation kit.
Yeah, a flare.
Yeah.
So
Kendall mint cake.
Exactly
right. Yeah.
Very hard wearing boots, and it was worth it. It was absolutely worth it.
A bivouac.
The Wasps showed up today, and as well as Sale played, there's got to be some culpability on Wasps. They've got a ton of talent in that back line. And if they're not careful, they are going to get beaten a few more times because they are not interested in the physical confrontation.
No, and that was one of the things. I assume it was a prescribed game plan because they used Jennings, Addison, Ioane, Bryn Evans, Olika. They used them through that 10-12 channel a lot. And they made yards a lot.
I think you can put Kyle Eastman into a team that tackles and he won't get shown up. You cannot put Kyle Eastman in between Goppert and Cipriani. You know, it's not fair.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you usually have a back row. Wasps at their best have a back row in Haskell who works his socks off. Like, regardless of what he's like off the field, it's all about him. On the field, it's all about everyone else because that's the sort of dog work that he does. And they really miss that. So you've got Reader, good player, but he loves to carry. Thomas Jones loves to carry.
Reader didn't carry particularly well.
No, he didn't.
They missed someone like Guy Thompson or Nathan Hughes to get them over that gain line.
Now, on the other side, TJ Ioane. TJ Ioane does not care if he sees 35 or not. He runs like... He is possessed. He is a true warrior. Every time you watch him, you think, how is he getting up? And then he slowly puts his shoulder back into place, shuffles back into the attacking line, and he does it again and again.
There was a few
and
times
again.
When I thought he was going, he's definitely going off this time. Yeah.
Will Addison, one of the bravest players that you're likely to see in the Premiership. But do you know what? I think credit should go to the coaching staff here because...
One man in particular, you think?
Yeah, one man in particular, Steve Diamond. They don't have a fly half.
Can we have this? Can we categorically have this on the podcast, JB? You are a Sale Sharks fan now, aren't you?
Absolutely not, no.
No, just on that point, Tim. At full time, JB's exact reaction was, yes, yes, we did it, we did it.
That is nonsense.
I knew we were going to do it. I actually corrected you and said, we did it. I mean, they did it.
No, that's nonsense.
That is the exact, the literal conversation that we had.
Nonsense. I don't know where that came from. Phil's losing his mind. Is there a more natural try scorer in the Premiership than Denny Solomona? He's had, how many games Union now? And how many tries?
Seven games, nine tries, something like that.
Eight tries. In the Avicii.
And he played so well today. I mean, I don't know if it came up on camera, but even like his defensive contribution, you know, he gets in the middle of all the physical altercations without crossing the line.
So I will say on Denny Solomona, going forward, spectacular when he's got the ball.
Yeah.
He put in a few big hits as well. I was watching him quite keenly. And
he flies up a lot though, doesn't he?
Well, so it's actually interesting. I don't think his work rate is particularly good. And they actually, Mugford said it before the game, they actually almost hide him in defence a little bit. They don't drop him in D because they don't trust his positioning.
Yeah,
Mugford said it beforehand. Did you have a good old chat with Danny Cipriani?
Yeah, we did actually. Good guy.
Great guy. Really nice bloke, yeah.
Yeah. So basically, Sale on putting the classic pendulum, they just drop back too, which is interesting. And
Should you be sharing that information? Have you just dropped Mugford in it? Is he going to be sacked for discussing team tactics?
Post game.
Yeah, and it's, I think anyone who watches the game can see that.
Yeah.
Like, you just have to look where Denny Solomona is standing at any point in the game.
But if you watch them closely as well, there's a lot of, not clever stuff, but there's a lot of unorthodox stuff. So they don't have a kicker. They are struggling to find a 9-10 combination that works. They move Sam James in there. Everything has been planned very, very well to get around the deficiencies in the entire squad. And to beat top of the league with a bonus point should not be sniffed at. It is a very
no, it's not sniffed at.
Very
I would also point out for the people that were Newcastle fans, for example, saying, talk about us a bit more. You know, we're really pushing for top six. We have just talked about Sale in the intricacies of their play.
Yeah, but
way
to be
more
fair,
than we talked about Newcastle.
But to be fair, Tim, I'm not in Newcastle, am I? And I can't watch Newcastle. If I was in Newcastle, we would talk about Newcastle in detail.
But yeah, I think we have covered most of the points that you need to make about that game.
Yeah.
The next question.
Just one last interesting thing about the sales preparation for this week.
It better be interesting because the
only thing that you find interesting is preaching about eligibility for international teams. Interesting.
No.
Which
I
is
don't, I don't
they have split
the
squad this week. They have split the squad this week.
Talk about one team more than any other.
Tim, calm down. They have split the squad this week. So the guys who weren't playing in the 23 have basically been preparing as Wasps all week. So they weren't in the first team meetings. They weren't doing anything with the first team except for preparing them to be Wasps. Whereas most weeks they are all fully integrated, which I found very interesting.
I'm not sure I particularly find that very interesting.
You don't find it interesting that they've cut the squad in half and they're not allowed to interact because half of them are
they're not
to
allowed
be
to interact.
No, not in training. They are training completely separately.
I find that unusual. I'm not saying I find it particularly interesting.
Wow.
Let us know.
Wow. What is the point in doing research?
Let us know at Rugby Podcast. Do you think that is an interesting fact?
Of course, I'll tell you what.
Balance the research. Let's have a couple of contacts at other clubs and then come forward with other tactical insights every now and again Northampton.
Like Leicester at the start of the show, and I told you what their first four phases were.
So Leicester and Sale. Yeah, you got contacts there. I'm saying, you've got 10 other clubs, spread it about.
Do your own homework. Right, shall we go into next week's...
Well, no, Jay, you've had your 5 minutes on Sale, your beloved Sale.
Do you want 5 minutes on Ulster?
No. Tim wants his time to talk about the eligibility laws.
Oh, go on then.
Apparently, as was talked much on the television, in 17 days, Denny Solomona becomes eligible for England under residency rules. He moved to Castleford. That's the first time I've said Castleford, not Castlefield. he moved to Castleford on the 8th of March, 2014.
Okay.
So he's qualified.
So he'll be qualified to play for England.
Good for him. Let's get him in the squad ASAP.
I'm just interested in how this one works because there's been talk from the French Rugby Union, the English Rugby Union, the Welsh Rugby Union of changing the eligibility rules if it's not done from on high by World Rugby.
Yeah, all right. So I understand exactly why people get upset about this and you have outlined your feelings on this fairly recently and fairly frequently. I just think... If it is if we're talking about the Olympics and it's unpaid and you're training in a gym which you made yourself in or in an old high school or something, fair enough, represent your country. When there's money on the table, when it's a professional sport, when there's mortgage payments and futures involved here, I don't think you can. It's good enough or acceptable to say, hey, you're not from England, you're not going to play hard enough, or you don't deserve to be here. It's a professional sport, and if you get selected to play for England before you get selected to play for Samoa or New Zealand, so be it, because that is your
future. Is that what happened with Nathan Hughes? He was selected for England before he was selected for Fiji?
No.
Or did he have a berth at the World Cup and opt to take it?
That's not on. I mean, what you're saying there is Nathan Hughes, please sacrifice. I mean, what Nathan Hughes does with his money is up to him, but it's completely his discretion whether he takes that money. And it's a professional sport. And if you're...
Yeah.
I mean, you can't... Your brother played the game. You know the physical sacrifices you've got to make to play it. And I do not think it's unreasonable at all for two reasons. A, he deserves the money because he's good enough. And B, the Fiji Union is a joke. It's a farce. And I wouldn't play for them, Samoa or Tonga.
So let me be clear. My issue is not with players. It's with rulemakers and governing bodies. And the rulemakers and governing bodies are spoiling the integrity and spoiling the tradition and the passion of what it means to be an international rugby player. And with the professionalism of sport, it's taken on another level, and the chasm between unions is getting wider and wider. And it's not, you joke about this being an EDL thing. This isn't. This is actually the 6-7-year-old boy in me that used to first watch rugby union and used to love watching the way that the England team on Six Nations matches, or Five Nations if it might have even been back then, belted out that national anthem like it was the biggest moment of their life, and Argentinian players crying in their national anthem, and Alan Wynne Jones's face when he belts it out for Wales. That's what it's about for me. And I understand professionalism.
We're not talking about the Olympics.
I understand professionalism. I'm just saying I don't like it. So the governing body and the lawmakers shouldn't allow it to be a possibility, in my opinion. And if you have a passport and you're a citizen, that seems like a reasonable...
Nope.
And it's a five-year period. That seems like a reasonable line to draw as a lawmaker. As a governing body, it's about spreading the money and making sure the money is used better and growing the game as a whole. Yeah. And Denny Solomona... There's talk of him going on the Lions tour. If that happens, it's an absolute joke,
in my opinion. It is not, because I actually don't think there should be any sort of residency rule, actually, because it is professional sport. And unless, the way the union sort it
so
out...
No residency rule.
I'm not that
so
keen
people
on
can
it.
People can just go from one... So you never have to have lived in England and you can play for England? No grandparents, no lineage, no nothing.
I mean, the problem is with it... Like, if you're a tier one, if you're in a tier one nation, the preference should be there. And in an ideal world, everyone should be paid the same for playing in tier one. Hence, it's tier one, all right? But that just simply isn't the case. And if you're talking about a 5-year residency rule, I'm not comfortable with saying to a player, look, you can't earn money for the next 5 years, and that could...
£500,000. The player can earn money. So CJ Stando was not playing for free when he went over to Munster.
But he wasn't playing on island money.
No, he wasn't, but he knew the island was a possibility. He didn't go for that. He went for the Munster money.
Well, yeah, and also you've got... I mean, let's not get into the politics of South African rugby. You have to understand...
Let's not talk about that.
It is not fair to say to a professional player, you're not allowed to play at the height of the sport because of politics.
But
and that's so all it is.
There has to be a law...
I'm pragmatic. I know there has to be residency.
Yeah, let's nip this in the bud, because we've talked about this way too much. There does have to be a rule. There is one rule at the moment. There might be another rule at some point. It will be a general consensus from unions, and that will be what is adhered to. That is it. I understand Tim's point. I completely get the passion side of things. I just want some clarity on it and consolidated position. If it's going to change, let's get it done.
There's been a lot of people that have sort of brought up the in this discussion on our Twitter feed and stuff. They've brought up, well, hold on a minute, Tim. You seem all right with Big Ben Teo. The difference is his mum is English. He has a British passport. He's a citizen. So it's not. Some bloody UKIP Brexit type thing. This is about. I think the game is lagging behind the professionalism of the sport, and the lawmakers and the governing bodies need to catch up.
Sorry, what do you mean by that? What do you mean? It's like the professionalism is lagging behind the sport.
Well, because it's now after it's become
professional,
prevalent enough that it's a bit of a problem. That now the lawmakers and the governing bodies are looking at it, going, "Ah, we might need to deal with this."
And that's come about
because of the professionalism of the sport.
So
I just say they need to catch up, and much like Phil says, make a law. Scotland are the one. Scotland and Ireland are kind of keeping very quiet about the 5-year rule because, as it stands, that seems to be part of their strategy is project players. Part of their strategy for performing well on the international stage. I don't like that as a strategy, which it seems to be for Scotland and Ireland.
Well, I'm a complete Philistine on this. I just want to see the best 15 players, regardless where they come from, on a team. I really don't care.
Very good. Right.
Good.
Can we please not talk about that for at least 6 weeks or so? Because I feel like we spoke about it every single week in the build-up to the Six Nations.
Well, here's hoping Eddie Jones has sees the defensive frailties you see in Denny Solomona, and it isn't an issue before World Rugby decide what the laws are going to be going forward.
Yeah, I do think... So his finishing was spectacular.
But he literally does nothing but finish, does he?
Yeah. Yeah, that is my concern. So even this is all talk. I don't think he would be on Eddie Jones's radar, or certainly from what I've seen. Because you look at a great example would be Rocco Degouni, whose finishing is also pretty spectacular. He does more than that as well. Obviously, he's running his defenders, beating his change of direction. But he does have question marks. Eddie Jones clearly has question marks over some of his positioning and some of his defence. So that's probably a good example.
Just very briefly, did we talk Bath Quinns?
No, we didn't.
We cut out.
Yeah, because good game.
Very good.
It wasn't a great game, actually. There were some very, very good moments, mostly by the back threes, mostly by Rocco Degouni, Vissa and Yard, with a bit of Marchant in there as well. The first half was so scrappy. Bath couldn't keep hold of the ball, it seemed. They go a few phases and turn it over. But Priestland had a very good game and he kicked excellently and controlled it and kept Bath in sight and then steered them home. So Priestland probably man of the match.
Vissa scored again this time, yeah?
He did.
Oh, why is he not starting for Scotland? Why is he not even in the Scotland squad? What's the reason for this?
Well, he is in the Scotland squad, but he's not been in the match today 23. And he's not starting because they rate Maitland and Seymour ahead of him.
It's amazing, though, because I would have had him at least on the bench.
Yeah, well, he is just a winger.
Yeah, that's true.
So they go for someone, I guess, like Bennett or someone else who can cover a few positions.
And what do you think they see in Maitland over Vissa? Because I know which one I'd have at the moment.
based on the form from what I've seen of the two of them in the Premiership,
fancy,
I'd probably go for Vissa.
Do you want to do a fancy draft trade, Vissa for Maitland?
No.
Okay, fine. Thought I'd try it.
Good effort.
No.
Well, what do you think Quinns are going to do next week?
Good question. So, into the games. Friday night, we mentioned it before, Harlequins host Leicester.
Yeah.
Now, Quinns obviously very strong at home. Leicester do seem a little bit resurgent, although, as we mentioned earlier, they've had two home games against two poorly performing teams. So, this will be interesting. But give me Leicester.
And I'm going to say Leicester by 2 scores.
Ooh.
So I think Leicester are going to win this by 14 points.
Any re-raise, Tim?
You think Quinns are going to beat Leicester?
No.
Sorry if I said that, I got it wrong. Leicester to beat Quinns by 14.
Yes.
At the Stoop?
Yes. I think Leicester to win by one score, 5 points.
Yeah, I think it'll be close. I think it could be a toss-up. I think it's one of those games I could see Quinn's winning, but I don't think they will.
Yes. So Leicester. Then, on Saturday, 2:45 kickoff. Saracens, who have lost two on the bounce, are losing a few players, as we've mentioned. Host JB's beloved Sale Sharks.
A sale for me?
just very, very quickly. I think we're losing our touch on the old transfer thing because Monday morning, Ben Spencer, and I think that's off now.
It looks like it's off, to be fair.
Yeah,
it doesn't look good. I have been told multiple times that the transfer paperwork is done. It's on the table. There's some contractual stuff. I just don't believe it. I think we've been misled so much on transfers to Sale. It's very hard. I mean, Scott Fardy is the latest one. Scott Fardy would be a hell of a signing, actually. I really like Scott Fardy.
I've heard Scott Fardy.
Not really.
I genuinely believe, and this isn't knocking Sale or wanting to go down a conversation about Sale as a club, but I genuinely think they're getting desperate.
It has that feel to me that Diamond is putting, or these names are being put out there, and they're being linked with a lot of players with little or no truth behind in order to catch some people.
You know what I honestly think it is? I think it's part of that, and I think Diamond is basically fishing and not wanting to pay the money for the talent available. Do you know what I mean? So, like, Strauss is going to go to Toulouse now. I think that's pretty much on the cards. And if Ben Spencer doesn't come, well, happens. We'll go over it.
But the other one is, from Saracen's perspective, there is some rumblings of rumours. We still don't know exactly where Ruan Pienaar is definitely going, do we, Phil?
No.
Ooh.
So he's not, as far as I'm aware, there was a lot of talk about Montpellier.
I thought that was done.
As far as I'm aware, it's not an official done deal.
I'd love to see him in the Avicii.
I would also love to see him in the Avicii.
Would you like to see him in Saracen's colours?
Saracens would be quite a good
It'd
fit.
It'd be weird, wouldn't it, if you went to Saracens and half the crowd are from Ulster. Just to watch Ruan.
Wigglesworth and De Kock off, and then Pienaar just to put the finishing touches to Spencer.
Do you know what? I think they're going to, if they don't get Ruan Pienaar, he's one of the few players I think that can replace Wigglesworth. With that kicking game and the intelligence.
Yeah.
And he can do more as well.
Yeah, he can do. He can play the same game as well as Wigglesworth and do more on top.
But he's one of the few guys that can do that.
If you really liked Ben Spencer and you thought, this is the guy, this is our future nine, we think he's the future England nine, if you wanted to pick a player to just like come in, right, we need a year or two from you, to come and give us plenty of game time, but also just put the finishing touches to this young guy. Who else would you pick?
Oh,
do you know what? I don't think I would pick Ruan Pienaar. And the reason why is because he's such the main guy. I think I would probably go with someone similar to Ben Spencer and rotate them like wasps. Because what Ben Spencer needs more than anything now is game time.
Yeah, he does need game time.
You know, so you know, if Ruan Pienaar's fit, Ruan Pienaar plays, particularly the big games.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Saracens going on the Wasps route, whatever that looks like, I don't know.
With the two scrum halves.
Yeah, but I don't know who the other scrum half would be.
Not Ben Spencer then, you're saying?
No, Ben Spencer and one other.
Okay, so they're getting rid of Wigglesworth.
Yeah, because he's signed for Toulon, hasn't he?
No, he's re-signed for Saracens, Wigglesworth.
Oh, has he?
Yeah.
I thought he was off to France.
He's staying at Saracens,
isn't brilliant he? News. Oh, right. Yeah. So in that case,
Ruan probably not.
Ruan comes in. Spencer's definitely off.
Yeah.
Got ya. Did not know that.
So, Saracens, they haven't lost two games back-to-back in the Premiership in 2 years, nearly.
Why did I not think they did that last year? I thought they did that. They had a period like this last year, did they not?
2015... They last lost back-to-back games. Wow. Three in a row. You have to go back quite some time. I think they're in danger with the players they're missing out on, and particularly as we talked about in the engine room, their set piece is stuttering the line out.
And there's so they had Mako Vunipola back for 1 week, And then I'm pretty certain they won't have him next week.
Nope. Agreed. And as far as I can see, Sale won't lose a single person. I think Sale can do this. And I actually think they will do it.
Sarri's at home.
So
just
Sale, we've already said, we've touched on it, but Sale were very good. This was, Wasps didn't play brilliantly, but Sale did play very well. So Sale have a chance, but give me Saracens at home.
That's special. Yeah.
And I think if Sale get, so speaking to some of the Sale players, they are targeting their home games.
Yeah,
they want to create the for AJ Bell.
Has a ring to it, that.
Real catchy.
Fort's pension provider.
Real catchy title. Yeah. So I think for Sale, realistically, a bonus point or two out of this game would be a very positive result.
Okay. Exeter, Newcastle.
Tasty.
Isn't it?
Give me Exeter.
Exeter, I've got to agree with that.
Exeter at home.
Exeter, who have scored about 80 points in the last 2 weeks. I think Exeter will score a fair few points here.
Yep. Northampton, Worcester?
Northampton.
I've
still got question marks over Northampton.
Northampton by three.
Three no scores more, or 3 points?
3 points.
Close game.
Northampton. Did we talk about that game?
Yes.
Of course we did, Of course we did.
Wasps versus Gloucester is going to be interesting.
I think Wasps will have a rocket up them.
Agreed.
I think they'll...
And Gloucester, any team could turn up. It could be the team that went to Welford Road.
I think Wasps will also change a few personnel. I don't think you'll see Sippers, Eastman, Gopeth in that format again.
No.
I think they'll move Kirtley Beale into the centre and Willie LaRue will start at 15.
Yeah.
Does that solve the problem, though?
Kirtley Beale's a pretty tough cookie.
He is a good defender, Kirtley Beale.
See, Kyle Eastman's a good defender. As in, he doesn't miss many... his tackle completion is actually, around the time of the World Cup, it was higher than the alternatives. But, like I say, surrounded by some flaky players. I mean, Danny Cipriani is not particularly good at defending.
There was one rook... Danny Cipriani went for half a second. He thought about going for the ball in a ruck, and I don't even know who the Sale player. There's two Sale players coming to clear out, and he just stepped out of the way.
Absolutely not interested.
Yeah,
could not be less interested.
No, thank you.
Do they have anyone else on their box who can step in there and be a big defender? Someone who doesn't make mistakes, nice and solid.
So what I would probably do is drop Sippers to the bench, start Gopeth at 10, and possibly even drop Eastman, but you could have Gopeth and Kirtley Beale alongside Eastman. That solidifies it a little. The alternative would be to put Leui at 13 and put Beale at 12, and then you are starting to get a really solid backline with still some
a little bit more balance in the back row. I mean, look, they're going to be fine because they can play such beautiful rugby when they decide to. And that's the other thing.
Some of their tries they scored today.
Yeah,
were,
like they didn't. They looked like they weren't even trying.
Well, it's training ground moves from 50 yards out and not a hand laid on any player.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe they'll just carry on going with what works for them. But the interesting thing about Gloucester is how much intensity they brought to the Saracens game.
Yeah.
And if the Wasps' Achilles heel is intensity and physicality, this could actually be a bit closer than we think.
So it's a very interesting position for Gloucester. So tactically, Gloucester won because they kicked very intelligently. Their kick chase was excellent, and they put pressure. They played in the right parts of the field and put pressure. If you do that against against Wasps, and you're not on top of your game, and you're kicking to Wade and Kirtley Beale and Willie LaRue, and they find some space, it's a terrible, dreadful tactic.
Yeah,
if it goes wrong.
There was a stage today where the chase wasn't. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. And Kirtley Beale very nearly killed them for it.
Yeah.
They're just so switched on. Maybe they just carry on doing what they're doing.
But give me Wasps. Give me Wasps at home.
Wasps.
Either narrowly or by a lot. I'm not sure which. I'm not sure how this is going to pan out at all.
And final game, Bristol host Bath.
It's going to be a beatdown, isn't it?
I feel like it might be a beatdown.
I can't see it being anything else.
Yeah. Yeah, as much as Bristol would like to raise their game and possibly will, that's the biggest conundrum of all for me. Just the shadow of a team that even a few weeks ago.
Yeah. At least they can hang in their hat, couldn't they, on saying, "Oh, we've got certain players out and they're coming back." Not anymore.
Yeah.
Big Gav, Jack Lamb.
If Big Gav comes back, do you think that could be a turning point, Jay?
No, I think Jack. I think
even Big Gav.
I think Jack Lamb could be very, very helpful for him. But that's about it. I don't. What's happened to him? He must have a long-term injury or something.
I'm not sure. I noticed Jordan Crane was back this week, but that didn't really help.
Huge news.
Yes. So we're all saying Bath.
Okay.
Beautiful stuff.
Fantastic. Right. Well, go on, Tim.
I was just going to say, don't forget, we're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, where the conversation continues. Follow us, and we will have some rugby-based pictures and video and all sorts of other little bits going up on Instagram. Egg Chasers Podcast on Instagram. Apparently, from what I understand, that's where everyone is these days.
Yeah, that's where the kids hang out, isn't it?
More so than Twitter, yeah. Egg Chasers Podcast on Instagram, and... get that razor, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. Facebook, Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. You can find all the information about the podcast. You can watch videos from the Rugby Dungeon, and you can find out about our trip to Romania, which we may talk about in the midweek international podcast, which is coming soon.
MWIP.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right, boys, I'll see you on Wednesday?
See you Wednesday.
Tuesday night.
Tuesday night, yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.